All right, we're live here with some very special guests, just like all of our guests here at Radio Statler. You guys just came off a panel, right?
Yep. Minutes ago, yeah.
That panel, can you refresh me again? What the panel was on?
Ethical obligations for service
providers.
Yeah, you know, how to decide when what the government is asking you to do is right or wrong.
Yeah, and can we go quick down the line? Just what your name is and what service you provide
Sure.
or was providing?
Yeah. My name is Nick Merrill, and I used to run a company called Calix Internet Access. At the moment, I'm the executive director of a nonprofit called the Calix Institute. But the Calix Internet Access Corporation was an internet service provider and a web host and security consultancy. And I guess the reason I'm on the panel is because in 2004, I got a national security letter from the FBI, and I refused to comply with it. Instead, I ended up suing John Ashcroft and the Justice Department. And I almost overturned the whole Patriot Act, but the government sort of pulled out of the fight at a certain point. They withdrew the letter and wanted to stop fighting because I think because they kept losing and they were
yeah.
afraid to lose at the Supreme Court level.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually complied with the letter. You just sued over the right to talk about it?
No, I never complied with the letter. I never handed over anything. And eventually, when the government withdrew its request for the data, I got rid of the machines. Wrote over the data like 35 times, and then
DOD
style, and
then D-band.
Yeah. Yep.
So, what does the Calix Institute do, real quick?
The Calix Institute is an educational organization and a membership-based organization, and mostly what we do is training and development of curricula for people to learn how to keep their information safe and private on the internet.
Okay.
You know, we work with nonprofit organizations, other NGOs who work in the human rights field. We give trainings at law schools and at journalism schools and with organizations like the Center for Constitutional Rights. People who either have attorney-client privilege or privileged conversations with their journalistic sources,
right.
And people who need security for their jobs usually and for what I feel are important reasons.
Yeah. So let's move on down the line. So can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Declan McCullough. I've been a journalist for over 15 years, covering a lot of civil liberties, privacy stories for CNET, CBS, CBSNews.com, two stints at Wired, and Time, Inc., and so on. I moderated the panel. It was one that turned out pretty well, a lot of audience involvement. And now I'm I've left CNET to found a startup, a news-related startup. You can sign up for the beta at recent.io, recent.io.
All right, and
and finally, my name is Ladar Levison. I'm the CEO, founder, and owner of LavaBit. Since I shut down the service last fall, I've been spending most of my time as a civil misfit, deep in the butts of all of the people who gave me grief, and focusing on the development of the dark mail protocol and mm-hmm. application suite.
Awesome. So, these are all really interesting. It's a lot of diverse backgrounds for you guys, I think. The panel went really well, right, guys? You think so?
I think so. It's also interesting, and it's something that a lot of other conferences would not do, having the opportunity to spend an hour talking about the ethics of things, not just what the law is and what the law should be, but also what you should do, what's the right thing to do when the feds come calling. Because if you run a popular enough service, as these two folks have, then eventually they will.
Yeah.
And this might be a good time to get Nick on the record. We are recording this, right? Because we seem to have this bad habit of when Declan's in the room, the recording devices get shut off, and he asks these great questions, and we get these great responses, but we can't preserve the answers.
If you look over here, you can see on the monitor we are recording this.
So, Nick, tell me what it was like trying to decide what to do with this letter that had... Well, talk about how you received it,
sure.
And then how you came to the decision to show it to your lawyer,
sure.
And then how the two of you decided what to do next and what that experience was like.
Sure, sure. So, you know, in the winter of 2004, the beginning of the year, it was like January, February, something like that, I get this phone call. The person on the other end of the phone says that they're from the FBI and that they have a letter for me. But I wasn't even sure if it was a prank or real. And so I said, like, yeah, okay, cool, sounds good, thanks. And then hung up and I went back to work. But then, like, within an hour or something, there's a heavy knock at the door. And like, an actual Fed in a trench coat with slick back gray hair and everything, like, right out of central casting, comes into my office, reaches into the pocket, inner pocket of his trench coat, pulls out this letter, gives it to me. And I open this letter and I read it in the agent's presence. And it says basically that they're demanding all this information from me and that I can never tell any person that I've gotten the letter. And that was like in the third paragraph. I'm reading it right in front of the agent because it's like, at this point, it's like hugely suspenseful. So I get to this point and I'm like, I get to that paragraph, says no person. I can tell no person that I've been approached by the FBI. I look at this agent and I'm like, what about my lawyer? And what about my business partners?
Yeah.
And this guy is just like, well, I don't know. I'm just here delivering a letter and don't ask me. I just work here. And he won't even address my question. And he's just like, just sign this receipt that you've received the letter. So then, you know, I start to Google it. And if you follow this issue, like the letter starts to refer to Executive Order 13233. Is that the right one? The one from Reagan from 1981?
Right, right.
I think it's 13233, this executive order. And then it refers to Title 18, Section 2709 of the federal code. And I'm like, well, what is this? You know, like I took some law
D&E.
Classes. Yeah, I took some law classes in as an undergrad, you know, so I'm not a lawyer. I'm not trained as a lawyer, but I'm a fan of the law. And so I started to Google all this stuff. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I looked it up and I was not able to. The Patriot Act is very hard to read because, number one, it's like a 4-inch thick document. And also, it essentially is like a set of diffs, and it goes back and applies like patches to all the different code from going back to like the 70s. Like it applies like add a comma here, add this sentence, add a comma there, add this sentence. So
it's really like reading an RFC.
Yeah.
I was going to say an errata.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah. It's very hard to read. So you have to flip back and forth. And at a certain point, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm in way over my head. Like, I cannot figure this out on my own. And you know what? Like, I'm an American. I'm going to call my lawyer. And it just so happened that my lawyer, my corporate lawyer, was this old friend of mine. So someone I really trusted. It wasn't like just some guy I found. It was like a guy that I've known for 20 years and, you know, someone I really trust as a person. So I called him up and I said, look, I got this really weird letter and I don't know what to do about it. And I think it's wrong. I think it's illegal because it directs me to hand over all this information, but this is not a warrant. It's not a search warrant, and it's not an order from a court. It's just signed by some lawyer from the FBI, but it says that I have to give this information and I can't tell anyone. And so he's like, come to my office right now. So I go over, I bring the letter, I show it to him. And so this was where luck just really hit me, that I ran this company, and most of my customers were other companies. You know, there were people like Snapple and IKEA, and so I worked for like ad agencies and had these big blue chip clients. But I also had this whole side thing of working with nonprofits, and I would give free service to all these nonprofits that I liked that were doing interesting stuff. Well, it turned out that one of my pro bono clients was the New York Civil Liberties Union, and I had a relationship with them, and I could just call them all the time just because you know, I knew them. I had a working relationship with them, so I called them up and with my lawyer. He said, "Let's call them. Says you know them. Let's call these guys." So we called them up, and I instantly got on the horn with their legal director. So it's like the top guy. And we described it very briefly to him. Like, we got this weird letter, and he was like, come to the office right now. Get in a taxi. Come here now. So we get in a taxi. We go there. And then they bring in, they say, can we bring in another colleague of ours? And they call up the ACLU, and another lawyer comes in. And at this point, I'm really starting to be terrified because I told my lawyer, now we told the NYCLU's legal director, and now we've told someone from ACLU. So now I've now broken this commandment in the letter to not tell anyone three times. And I've showed the letter to all of them. And but I'm thinking deep down in my soul, I believe that I have the right to a lawyer, and it's okay. At the same time, like, if you remember back, this is 2004, so President Bush had just declared that he could name any American to be an enemy combatant, just put a sack on their head and just drag them away. So I kind of felt that this was going to happen to me, but I was okay with it. I wasn't okay with it, but I accepted it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay is the wrong is.
Yeah.
But I came to a place of peace, you know. Essentially, what happened was that we ended up filing this lawsuit. I didn't know at the time, but the lawsuit has now been dragging on for 10 years.
Is it still not done?
Just to follow up on this,
yeah.
Talk about what it was like when you had to go see your lawyer and interacting with the ACLU. Did everybody at the ACL know who you were, even right. though you were referred to as John Doe
no.
in the filings?
No.
Or was it just one lawyer at the ACLU? Or
what? So because of the gag order that came with this letter, the lawsuit had to be filed under the name John Doe because they could not name me, nor could they name the name of my company. So the lawsuit, the full name was something like John Doe and John Doe Inc. versus John Ashcroft, Robert Mueller, the FBI, the Justice Department, blah, blah, blah. And so I would go to the ACLU offices once we started pursuing this lawsuit, and this went on for like 7 years.
With a bag over your head, right?
So no, thankfully I didn't have to wear a bag, but when I would show up there, I couldn't really tell anyone else other than the two or three lawyers that I worked with who I was or what the deal was. I would have to be brought up by an assistant or something, but they didn't know who I was, or I couldn't talk to them about anything. So I'd just be like, oh, how's the weather today, you know? And I didn't know anyone at ACLU other than the two or three people that I worked with. Unfortunately, I was never able to go to court either because they were closed sessions. Everything was done under seal and it was secret. So
you could have, do you try to actually go into the courtroom? I mean, you're a party to the case. You should be allowed to go, right?
Yes, you should be, but I wasn't allowed to. The Connecticut librarian, same thing. They tried harder than me, and they were able to go to a remote court facility where they saw everything going on closed circuit. But I just let the lawyers go, and there was one session where I was allowed to go. And the reason was it was when it was being heard at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, when the government lost and then appealed that they lost, the Second Circuit heard the case. And a whole group of law school students went there. So I was able to hide amongst the 500 law school students. And it was really funny. Anthony Romero, the ACLU director, sat next to me, but he didn't know who I was. And I really wanted to introduce myself to him and talk to him, but I couldn't. So anyway, it was a very Kafka-esque, bizarre kind of experience.
Well, I'm sorry that we have to catch you guys short. I wish I could just talk with you all day. And I mean, this is really interesting stuff. Really wish we had more time.
Can we reserve 1 minute to ask Lador what he's up to now? He mentioned dark mail, but I don't know if he explained what that is. And is there a website where we can go to get more information or donate to it?
So certainly, dark mail is sort of an effort to make the encryption that we get with PGP ubiquitous and easy to use to improve the user experience of secure email communications. The tools and techniques necessary to secure real-time communications have been perfected. We have HTTPS, we have OTR, we have the Diffie-Hellman handshake,
right.
And that allow us to talk to another party in real time, but when you're trying to talk to a party that you've never communicated with in the past, asynchronously via service providers, how do you protect both the content of the message and the metadata associated with the message? Who is talking to whom so that we can get back that freedom of association that was supposed to be guaranteed to us by our Constitution.
Exactly.
So it's really a project aimed at restoring our rights through the use of technology by creating a new set of protocols and tools that use these protocols that will allow us to upgrade our email. Because the simple fact is that a year from now, if you're still using traditional mail, naked mail, and not dark mail, it's for one reason only. It's that because you enjoy knowing that the NSA is sifting through your communications.
All right. Well, there's a website for this project?
We'll be posting some of the design documents to darkmail.info here in the coming weeks. I'll be giving a follow-on, more technical presentation on the protocol at DEF CON. And then, of course, you can always go to lavabit.com where you can read some of the things that I've written. And there are still links and a Bitcoin address there if people want to help support the project.
Awesome. Well, that's great information. Thank you guys for coming in. Is there anything else that anybody wants to say before we have to go?
Yeah, I would like to say if people want to find out more about Calix Institute and what we're doing, our website is at calyxinstitute.org. That's C-A-L-Y-X institute.org.
And you want any of the benefits of signing up for or becoming a member of Calix, you can always show up at the mezzanine level here at the conference and give him cash with whatever name you feel is appropriate, and he will give you, you can read about that, of course, on his website.
I have a question for Ladar before we go. So Nick went to the ACLU, and why did you not go as well?
I actually went to the EFF, and they were the ones who referred me to Marsha Hoffman. I would prefer that an EFF attorney give the full and complete answer as to why they felt they couldn't take on my case, but I suspect it had something to do with a potential conflict of interest. Now, when it became apparent that Marsha couldn't represent me in a Virginia courtroom in 4 days, which was the amount of time that we had in terms of lead time, she did try and help me find an attorney, and she was handing me off names and telephone numbers faster than I could interview them. One of them was the ACLU, but I didn't get far enough down the list to end up talking to them.
All right. Well, it was great having you guys. Will you guys be coming to the next Hope Conference? Are you planning on it?
I would love to. I'm a native New Yorker, so I probably will.
Okay, that's great. How about you?
I'm probably going to be assassinated long before then.
I hope not. That would be very sad.
I'll do my best.
All right. Well, next time maybe you guys can come back on. We'll get you some more time.
Yeah, awesome.
All right.
Thanks very much.